Velkommen, bienvenue, welcome. It's opening night of Cabaret, but when Stevie goes missing, Moira is panicked to track down her leading lady. Patrick and David try to keep their recent engagement a surprise until the after party, and Johnny realizes how much he'll miss Alexis once she leaves to be with Ted and the Galapagos. The moment is here. Will it be an instant sensation or a giant theatrical flop? Find out as we unpack the season 5 finale, Life is a Cabaret. Willkommen, and we are back to the season 5 episode finale of Schitt's Creek.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome.
Yes, we'll leave it to Katie for the singing.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome. I did not do my homework, Stephanie. I did not.
I know, Catherine. I'm a little disappointed,
I am disappointing. Here's two reasons.
Okay.
They are
in case anyone wonders, I've been hounding Katie only since the dawn of time to watch the Liza Minnelli Cabaret movie.
Two unacceptable excuses. One, I waited till the last minute, which is not the excuse, but when I was talking to you about what streaming service it was on, I thought for sure I would have something to watch it on.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have HBO Max anymore.
That's where you said it was. On. Yeah, I remember watching it back in the day on Prime Video, but that catalog is always changing. Go ahead.
Well, then we're recording a day early, so I had one last day.
So you ran out of time. Well, you've still got, I mean, I would still encourage you to watch it.
I still want to and intend to actually watch it, but I did not watch it in time for this today.
I actually rewatched it last night. It was, I'm a 34-year-old with my parents' DirecTV login, so I periodically watch her cable television from time to time. And it was on like Turner Classic Movie or something. Last night. And so I recorded it and then I watched it. And I think it was airing probably because, and this is a bit of news this week, when this episode goes live, it will be the night of the Tony Awards.
And they're getting some like special thing.
This year, actor Joel Grey, who plays the MC, which is Patrick's role in Cabaret, he won a Tony, I think they said it was like 56 years ago or something when the stage show came out. He also won an Academy Award as well for the movie in that same role.
So he did played stage in the movie and film. And the show. Oh, cool.
So Joel Grey and John Kander, who is a composer for Cabaret, are getting a special Lifetime Achievement Award in theater.
Yeah, so that's probably, they were refreshing everyone's mind.
I think that's probably why they were hearing it, but it's just so like perfect timing for us too that we're doing this episode on the day of the Tonys.
How uncanny.
Like, how did that happen? I don't know.
This whole season has been really Broadway-centric with the
really
Anne Juliet news.
Well, as you say, don't forget David West Reed's musical, Anne Juliet. They are up for, I think, 9 awards. So we'll see. Yeah. I guess next week we can report back what the results were. But good luck to all the nominees. Cool. Very exciting. I love awards
season.
What
fortuitous timing. Awards.
Katie, we did some polls last week after your episode.
A few, yes. Yeah. Let's take a look. See, we'll start from the beginning. First, you asked for a couple of emergency room stories. A couple of seizure stories came in. I said before, that shit's scary.
Yeah,
right?
Hopefully everyone is okay.
Somebody wrote in that she got a sewing needle. Can you relate to this, Stephanie? It went through her fingernail and her finger while she was sewing. You must have had something like that happen.
Yeah. I mean, you get hand sewing needles all the time, but machine sewing needles happens from time to time. It's just kind of part of the
And then my cousin Deanne wrote in, she had herself and her husband had emergency room stories. He had kidney stones, which I'm told is probably the next worst pain next to childbirth.
Mm-hmm.
And she said he was trying anything he possibly could, like literally standing on his head in the waiting room to relieve the pain.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, I could picture him doing that,
though.
That's
crazy.
Totally. I could not imagine. I've never had a kidney stone. Have you?
No, but I've heard that they are terrible.
Knock on wood. Yes. My sister had a bad bout with them last year. She kept getting recurring ones. So
yikes. No bueno.
No thanks. The engagement. Did you see this coming?
Yeah. I thought more people would have saw it coming, but it sounds like a lot of people were surprised.
The majority, over half, said they expected it, but they thought this was
like eventually
fairly soon. This was very soon for the proposal.
Although we find out in tonight's episode that David says they've been together 2 years. So in the when you binge the series like we do, it seems like
it feels soon, but it's been a while.
Yes.
And when you, we've talked about this before, I think, when you're at a certain age and you have your life established, it doesn't take you as long to figure things out like that. Like, look at you and Sushant.
Right.
You know, you dated for whatever, 6 months, and now you're practically married.
I mean, we cohabitate.
Although
he's gone this weekend, so it's the girls' weekend, me and the cat.
Oh, yeah.
We've got free reign of the house.
But yeah, when you have your life kind of situated.
Yeah, it's one thing to be like young in a relationship where you're still like maturing into your own adulthood.
But you're
like,
still figuring your own life out.
We're as mature as we're going to get at this point. So that's not part of our journey anymore.
All of us. Like, you mean you and Sushant, but me too.
Yeah, in general. We've maxed out on maturity. Which, so.
If you know anything,
it's only downhill from here.
And then I like the one you posted today. It was a last minute one. So may not have all of the results in, but you said, Madam Twyla, at your service, would you or have you had a tarot card reading? And 50% so far, not for me. It's a bunch of hocus pocus.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next highest category was not yet, but I would. So
open
a few believers out there and just a few that's saying, 6% spooky and accurate. I like that answer.
Yeah. Well, like you said, with the game you played with your therapist where the cards were like very apropos.
It's weird how they, what did you just say?
Apropos?
Apropos.
Like appropriate?
Appropriate.
It's a never word.
Heard. I've never heard that before. You sounded really fancy using it, though.
I mean, it's all of the foils fill everys.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, that was it. A couple of fun things. We'll see what we'll see where those results land. But I'm betting that Twyla poll will stay pretty pretty much the way it is. If I had to guess,
I think you're right.
So
well, thank you to everyone who participated in those polls last week. Like I said, we are wrapping up season 5 with the finale episode, Life as a Cabaret, or as we're calling it, Maybe This Time I'll Win. And maybe this time Stevie will win. Or maybe this season I will win. Because
no,
Katie,
Stephanie.
I'm just going to say it now, because if you know math, it's obvious. This is my Simply the Best of Season 5.
Thank
now you might
Tina.
Be wondering, why would you announce this at the beginning of the episode, Stephanie?
Why do we even need to bother?
And that's a great question.
Episode's over.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Tune in next week when I explain why. No.
JK, we already hinted at this. Everybody
I'm not going to drag it out. I'm not going to string you guys along. You guys are mature enough to know. This is how it is. So I guess I'll just spend the evening explaining why I think it's a great episode as we unpack it all. It is a good one. And I don't want to like jinx it, because I'm like, so I've rewatched this episode like 4 times in the last 48 hours. And in addition to watching Cabaret, the feature film, which is a little different than the stage show. And I don't want to get like, I'll talk a little bit about the movie. I don't want to talk about it too much where it like detracts from the episode, because that's why we're here, obviously. But I think there are some like significant observations about why they chose Cabaret and like the connection to our characters versus the story's characters in that musical. But anyways, we'll get into all of that. I just want to let you know this episode is very important to me. If I don't win, I might crawl into a closet for an undisclosed
period
of time, a week or two. So just know that
you're not gonna win.
Yes, I am. I have to, because if
I
don't win,
you might. It's a really good one,
because if I don't win, like, not only is this my favorite episode of the season, this is my favorite episode of the series. And so I'll be very
You
upset.
Won last season. It's my I win odd seasons.
No. We let the audience decide. Maybe you'll win next season. I don't know. We'll see. Why am I speculating now? We need to dive in.
Defend it, sir.
Okay.
Well, no, not defend it. That's
unpack
next week.
Unpack it, and then defend it.
Unpack it.
All right. So we're going to start. This is basically just one long storyline, so I'm not even going to break it up into groups here. We start the episode. It's the morning after the engagement, but a very different kind of morning after than the honeymoon episode back in season one, which is You're Simply the Best, that one where it's the morning after Stevie and David hooked up. And they're in the, you know,
they're lying in
love shack, lying in regret. This is more like premarital bliss, you could say. David and Patrick basking in their engagement. Patrick serving up the leftover champagne from the hike. And David, he's like, is this what marriage is like? Katie, is that what marriage is like?
I have literally never had to bring me champagne in bed. I cannot think of one single time that's happened.
But you can tell, like, they're on cloud nine, David especially. Yeah.
Also, this is the next day. Remember last week I was like, oh, what are we, a week out from cabaret?
It was literally the day before.
It was the day before.
So if Patrick had really busted up his foot,
good thing he didn't.
He would not be doing those dance moves tonight. Mm-hmm. That is for sure. So David is in bed. He's got his glass of champagne. He's editing photos on his phone from their engagement, which I could only assume were taken on a self timer leaned up against like
a
fallen tree or a rock.
Yeah,
or something.
Tree stump.
And he's being a little critical of himself, says he looks like he crawled out from under a bridge, but Patrick looks great in these photos. So he's just trying to kind of curate what will eventually be a post. He's not posting anything yet because they haven't told anybody.
Of course.
So Patrick even asks, like, well, when should we tell people about our engagement? This is when we find out it is opening night of cabaret. And they both kind of agree that Moira probably wouldn't like being upstaged by this news. And they don't need to complicate the day any more than it already is going to be a complicated day. So Patrick suggests, well, we could wait until tomorrow to tell them. And David kind of pretends to agree for a moment. But then he's like, yeah, I haven't really thought about too much. But then, like, not so subtly goes into this elaborate scenario where, you know, we'll have everyone over to the motel after cabaret, kind of like a cast party. David will get up on his chair, give a speech. Patrick doesn't have to say anything, but he'll top off everyone's drinks while there's, you know, some ambiance, dim lighting, candles, music. Alexis will start crying and that will cause a ripple effect for the whole
flurry
room.
Of tears.
Everyone
this is like this is like when he planned out the birthday surprise. Everybody, there will be tears, even if they're
I think
only
this
mine.
Time he's like, people will be sobbing and I'll people be holding back be tears, sobbing. Which will make it more powerful. While Patrick is basically the waiter and goes around topping up drinks. And I like Patrick's response. Oh, I'm glad you haven't been overthinking this. And then because he has to keep his head in the game, he pours his serving of champagne into David's glass because he has to get up and get ready for the day.
Right.
And I like that David
I'll take
says
the extra champagne.
Yeah, right. David's like, good luck, honey, which is just like that him settling into this like fiance role.
Mm-hmm.
But he said good luck, which you're not supposed to do, because under his breath we hear Patrick say, it's break a leg, which
so is
true.
Is it bad luck to say good luck? Is that like actually a thing?
Yeah, you're not supposed to say good luck in a theater, or like it might be for like all performances, you're not supposed to say good luck. It's kind of like the Macbeth thing. Like, I think we've talked about, like, you're supposed to say the Scottish play. It's just theater superstition, you know. And maybe
sure
because
people good luck before. Hope I didn't sabotage anything.
At this point, we can't do anything about it. But maybe if you are superstitious, maybe, or even just a little bit stitious, as Michael Scott would say.
Not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Maybe this is the reason why the day kind of gets out of control, is because David
maybe
said good luck.
You're right. It really does spiral.
So it does start to spiral. Because next we see back at the motel, Alexis is warming up with some choreography, some nice high kicks in there. And I'm realizing, like, we haven't really seen much of her rehearsal process other than that
what
one
she's even doing.
First yeah. day, yeah, what she's doing. We just knew they referenced, like, she has a cute costume and
Kit-Kat
a lot of stage
girl
time.
Number five.
Exactly.
Or whatever
she's
she
definitely
is.
Doing some, like, chorus line moves. And Johnny comes in, startles her. We get a great, ew! Like, she's really, like, grossed out by him. And he's got a gift wrapped for her, which she's like, oh, thanks. And she just sets it to the side. And apparently he's been bringing her lots of gifts ever since she decided to go to the Galapagos.
He's feeling and extra sentimental.
He's being sentimental. And they just all are making her feel bad. And Johnny's like, no, I wouldn't say that that's my motive. But while I'm here, you should open this gift. Like, is basically telling her, like, open the gift. I want you to open the gift.
Open it in front of me.
In front of me so I can watch you open it. And so she opens it up and it is a framed family photo, a nice 8x10 in a very corporate looking frame. That brushed nickel is not a vibe, Johnny. It's not a vibe.
He needs to take lessons from Patrick now that Patrick knows how to pick out frames.
Katie, do you keep framed photos of people on display in your house?
No. The only ones I have are of me and Joe because I felt obligated because I got all these prints once from a photographer that took our pictures. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with these? But other than that, no, I have literally zero pictures.
Yeah. Of growing anybody. Up, it was very like that might have just been like 2000s.
That's a thing.
Early 90s. Or late 90s, you know, interior design, which was awful, of just like pictures of all your cousins' graduation photos.
For
and, like,
sure.
Those big collage frames in the hallway.
I used to try to do that. I mean, I used to try to do that of all the nieces and nephews. Yeah. And now there's so many freaking babies on Joe's
Once
side.
Once we learned the word aesthetic.
Oh, no, you're absolutely anymore. Right. Yep. 100%. Honey bee.
I keep.
No, it's not for me.
I keep photos of my nieces and nephew. So that's five photos right there. I think I have one photo of Susha and I in the living room and then one somewhere else in the house. And like, that's enough because it's like photos are hard. I'd rather make a photo book that is not like on a shelf.
Yeah. Like a coffee table book or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only photos I have in the house are a few randoms on the fridge of like little kids or my nieces or my friend's kids. I do have a few pictures at work of the cats and of me and Joe and of the kids, but that's a more collage-y
like
bulletin board thing. It's not my decor, you know.
Because if the photos are messy, the room is going to look messy.
Yeah, exactly.
Opinion.
Too much clutter.
So anyways, Johnny says, well, you could take this photo with you backstage tonight or maybe keep it on your bedside table when you leave. But she's like, no. And this frame weighs like 10 pounds. I'm not going to stuff it into my suitcase.
Very valid.
Yes. So just then Moira walks in with a beautiful large bouquet of flowers. She's reading a card out loud that says, break all your legs. And it's from the Elmdale Arts Council, which is our sponsor this week. So they are wishing her, I won't say it, but they're wishing her the two words that we're not allowed to say.
Best wishes.
There we go. for the opening night. And she asks Alexis when they're going to be leaving because she knows obviously about their plans. And Alexis says, Ted is leaving tonight after the show, which I'm thinking, okay, what airport are you going to? And that must be a red eye flight if you're leaving tonight. And she's going to be leaving in a week. So things are happening fast. And Moira, not paying attention as always to Alexis. Well, that's poor planning. You guys should have flown out together. That doesn't make any sense. And Alexis has to remind her, I'm in the show. That's why I have to stay here. So they're doing at least a couple shows.
Have we seen anything that indicates it does run for a week, but have we seen anything that indicates that
the
so
length
far,
of the show?
Or do we
we don't,
or maybe it's on the playbill or something. Or
so I'm glad you mentioned the playbill because they did actually like somebody, I don't know if it was, it must have been the show because it's a prop in the show. They made like an authentic looking playbill and you can go online and actually see like what the inside pages look like. We'll share that on Instagram if people are curious, but I'm guessing it goes for at least a couple days because when we come back for season five, they do reference that the show is wrapping up. So my guess is like
season six. We come back for season six.
Oh, yeah. Did I say five? Yeah. Six.
Because that's
season.
A hotly contended thing for next season. We'll talk about it. But how long did the show run for?
I would guess based on my experience in local theater, shows usually of that scale run maybe 3 to 7 shows. Within a week.
So like when we did it in school, I remember we had 2 weekends. We had Friday, Saturday and a Sunday matinee 2 weekends in a row.
Okay.
So something
similar. I wouldn't imagine it was much more than that.
Yeah.
Because those theater rental fees are expensive.
So Alexis can't leave until all of that
is done. So that's why she's leaving next week. And of course, as soon as Alexis points it out, Moira has to say face, well, of course you are. And then changes the subject about how impressed she is with Alexis. And her phone has been ringing nonstop because of compliments from the press for the show. And Alexis apparently was doing a great job running PR in addition to being a Kit Kat girl. And because of her hard work, Moira feels confident that she would like Alexis to handle all her publicity publicity for the Crows movie when it gets a premiere date. Now, last week we had a Bosnia reference, and apparently that wasn't random because we're back on track, sort of bringing the season full circle. Because when we started season
five,
we opened with the Crows, and now we're closing with the Crows. So that apparently is still happening in the background. And Moira did ask somebody to do it pro bono, and they said no. And so now Alexis is her new first choice to do all her PR. And Alexis is thrilled. She wants to know like when what the plan is, when the movie is being released. Moira says sometime this fall. And Alexis's face drops because once again, she has to remind her, I won't be here. I will be in the Galapagos. And Moira once again says, well, that's poor planning once again on your part. Like, how would she have known?
What time of year do we think this is right now? Like,
I think we're in the summer. I think I think June or July.
Okay.
Yeah. I think when we get closer to the wedding details, they talk about August, I want to say. So my guess is we're somewhere in the summer. Johnny loves this idea, though, of her doing the PR and says this might be a good opportunity. Maybe you should stay and, you know,
maybe now's not a good time to leave.
But Alexis insists, no, I'm going to support my boyfriend. I've thought about this and hopefully I can do a little bit of eat, pray, love while I'm there, too. Doesn't that sound nice? Mm-hmm. Moira, in this moment, though, she just wants to appreciate where they all are. Very, like, genuinely, sort of, takes all of their hands, appreciate this moment. Not just because David is not here and his energy can be a little bit
stressful,
intense. But she says one of my favorite lines that I think we actually said on the first episode we recorded this podcast, which is, we are all on the precipice of greatness. And they are.
That really really bounces off Twyla's last line last week. You all had something to celebrate.
Celebrate, yeah.
She's right.
And it's true. You know, the show is coming up. That's a big deal for Moira. It's exciting. The motel is heading in a good direction. Alexis is going off on this adventure. The Crows movie is now coming back into the fold. And we also know about the engagement, even though they don't know
they
yet.
Don't know so, yet. Yeah,
they are on the precipice of greatness.
Yep.
Now, Moira says, let's take a moment, hold hands in a little seance formation and appreciate this moment before everything changes. But that doesn't last too long because her phone rings, which is somehow still in her hand. And she's trying to ignore it, but she just can't because it might
could be the press.
Could be the press. Apparently, they did a cover story on her at the Elm Grove Sentinel about Cabaret. So she has to take the call and leave. But there's a really sweet moment at the end of the scene where it's just Johnny and Alexis left. And he kind of takes her hand and they give each other a little squeeze before Alexis has to cut him loose. He doesn't want to let go. She's his baby girl. And he's really feeling so sentimental. Mm-hmm. So then we're going to cut to the motel lobby. I assume this is all happening in the morning day of show. Stevie is studying lines last minute and David walks in. Another bouquet of flowers. This time it's for Stevie. And he's got a big, stupid grin on his face. He does a little shimmy as he like walks over towards her. Just can't help but be giddy and silly. And she sees right through it, you know.
What are you up to, basically?
Yeah, what are you up to? Who are the flowers for? And he says they're for you for opening night. And he's just got like a little pep in his step. And he says, you know, I'm proud of you. You've been stepping very far outside your comfort zone. Takes a lot of courage. And Stevie, her dry self, is like, you don't ever use the word courage unless you're criticizing someone's fashion choices. And
or it's something in the news about Oprah.
She's like, okay, what's
most importantly,
news? She got new espadrilles, he says. But he just like, he can't keep a straight face. And finally, when she's like, okay, what's going on? And he says, we'll celebrate later. She's like, okay, well, I guess I'll see you
celebrate
later.
What?
He can't hold it anymore, Katie. And he has to do the obligatory recently engaged pose where you hold your hand out in your friend's face.
Fine. Patrick said yes. Patrick proposed.
He caves. He gushes about the proposal. And Stevie goes through like a lot of emotions. And I think we can unpack this. We got a request last week from Tiffany, our devoted follower.
Avid listener.
We could talk a little bit about Stevie's evolution this season, but also like her relationship with David and potential feelings for David, because I guess that is a contested topic on the
groups,
on the groups
boards
the
or whatever.
So The way that I read this was Stevie initially seems a little shocked, but thrilled, happy. The emotions are just all kind of hitting her at once because she runs out and gives him a hug and she says she's happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
And she even gives him like a sisterly shove or like a BFF shove, like, hey, right. You know, why didn't you tell me sooner?
I can't believe you were trying to like keep this quiet.
Yeah. Right? And then she's starting to look overwhelmed and he's even like looking at her like, oh, are you okay? Because he wasn't going to say anything. But she's like, yeah, right. I just feel caught off guard. And, you know, he says, well, I should have waited, but she's glad she knows. She just says it's the nerves of the show and everything. Katie, do you buy that? What do you think?
Well, so the discussion in the groups, I guess, is that she's still, even after all this time, has feelings for David. Personally, I think that's off base. Having been in a situation where one of my best friends got engaged, like I knew it was coming, but I had no idea when, and it was a total shock. I have reacted just like Stevie. Literally, this was a while ago, but just when I found out, I just was so surprised and so happy. I literally collapsed crying for them, like in happiness. So, and it was not because I had feelings for him. As a really good friend, I think that she is just really happy for him. And I do think that what she says later to Moira kind of brings light to maybe why she had all these emotions all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we said this too in season 3 in My Simply the Best when he was on the date with Patrick and she secretly gave him the thumbs up and was just really happy for Patrick. I think that, okay, even if I don't think she has romantic feelings for him anymore, I think maybe at that moment in time she may still have, but I think she has come to the conclusion that if she's not going to be the person for him, she wants the best for him and she knows Patrick is the best mm-hmm. for him. So yes. I don't think it's romantic feelings anymore, my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, so in the Simply the Best book, they talk about how when Dan was talking to Emily about season 5, he basically said, this is Stevie's season, like more than any season she's ever had before. She has an arc of her own. And boy, does she ever, you know, with the situation with Amir falling apart and her feeling very lost and downtrodden, and then this opportunity mm-hmm. with Cabaret, and then, yeah, seeing her new best friend get engaged, someone that she'd been, involved with, and think back to season 1 where there was that terrible, sad scene where she thought they were going to move to New York yeah. together and like become something. So, yeah, there's just a lot of layers to their relationship.
This kind of goes with what I said when she talks to Moira, but from experience myself, it's hard to see people advancing in life when you're not.
Yes.
You know, when we moved back from New York, everyone that had already lived here in Michigan mm-hmm. for a while, they were buying houses and starting mm-hmm. to have babies, and we were still in an apartment. And I just thought, what have I done with my life?
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's probably more where it comes from. And we get to that conversation later where I don't think she... Like, I don't see Stevie as being jealous of Patrick.
No, me neither.
I think her and Patrick have a special friendship. I don't see her making sense with David, but they have turned, like, they still have a very special relationship that I think involves love. It's just not a romantic love.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, yeah, I think their relationship is just has a long history and has evolved in many forms, but where they're at now, I see her as being genuinely happy for him, but it's just her. She starts to reflect on her own situation a little bit, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
So anyways, she gets back to her desk and she's still kind of trying to calm herself down.
Brush off the emotion.
She's like, it's just this scene. I can't get it right. And she's trying to go over it at her desk, you know, before the show. And David, you know, not to put more pressure on you, but you're the only one I've told. So you can just not tell anyone until after tonight. But she is glad to know, you can tell. And even as he goes, she gives a very sincere, like zero sarcasm, congratulations. Like, and to me, that
which is very rare for her.
Yeah. So that showed me she is genuinely happy for them. Next scene, though, something has happened. It's later that day. And Stevie,
can I just, this scene here is the my biggest jealousy moment, because this scene cracks me up every time. I just wish this was in my episode because it's so funny to me.
Again, this is all happening in one day, so it's presumably the mid-afternoon or
like
something.
Like an hour later, maybe, or something.
Roland is on the phone with what sounds like the police, giving a description of Stevie, talking about how she kind of looks like a vampire, which Moira nods when he says that. She's like, yes, she does. Calls her a little skittish, mentions you might have to bring out the taser if it comes down to it. It's like, what has happened in the last, you know, commercial break?
Who left Roland in charge of this?
Who left Roland in charge? And why is he in there with Moira? And Moira says, you know, I should have known the risk of putting this, of the risk of stage fright, basically putting someone
who's
not used to
the
spotlight in such a position. She says she was a fool not to let Gwen understudy, which that's a whole different production right there.
Could you imagine the lift with Gwen?
Hey, no.
Patrick and Gwen, no.
David walks in, though, amidst this chaos and wonders what's going on. Roland says Stevie's gone missing. Apparently, Moira's been trying to reach her all day, but she's not answering her phone. Bob last saw her crying at the gas station. Now, this is a very small line, but like that implies something happened that we did not see. Why is Stevie crying in public at Bob's
or gas still station? Crying over or David's still crying. Engagement?
Who knows? I think they put that in there just to try to like confuse the audience a little bit. But apparently the last person in their bubble who heard from her was Johnny. She said she had to go out and do something. And then no one's seen her since. So David now feels like he has to say, oh, I did see her this morning. Moira gets really serious and in his face about it. Roland says he might need some hair samples.
She's like on DNA the attack. Testing. As soon as she finds out that David saw her, what did you do to her?
What exactly did you say? She says she knows that David has a triggering effect on people and this is not the day to set anybody off. And he kind of gets a little nervous in his mom's face and like stutters out that, you know, she said she was nervous about the show. And he's in a corner. He's back into a corner. And he has to spill the beans again.
I may have mentioned
that I got engaged and I told Stevie. Roland in that moment is thrilled. A wedding.
Genuinely happy.
Moira doesn't know what to say, which you think means like her tone kind of sounds
happy.
She's happy
also.
But then it goes right back around and she's going off on him. How could you not wait till after the show to drop a bomb like this? Just then Alexis walks in and overhears, you're engaged. And she gives him the swat. So everything is falling apart for David. Mm. All because he said good luck. We can assume that is the reason this is all happening.
You're right. You're right.
David's getting flustered. This destroys his plans for the announcement that he talked about. And Alexis now wants to know who's going to plan the wedding because I'm not going to be here. And Roland chimes in that they could ask Jocelyn to plan it because apparently, and this is some more backstory on Jocelyn, she's had to recently plan her brother-in-law's funeral and she did it for $100. Is this another reference to Jocelyn's sketchy sister?
I think so.
Did her sister like
this
kill
is
her
third
husband?
Time,
and,
I feel like.
Or she wouldn't plan her husband's funeral, so Jocelyn had to do it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I love this ending for this scene.
The chaos of it all. It's David is like frustrated with everyone. He says, Alexis, how did you make this about you?
This is not how this was supposed to happen.
This
he says,
is not
think,
at all how he
like
envisioned
that.
It. And Moira chimes in. Yes, this is not about Alexis because we need to find Stevie at the end of the day or a lot of people are going to be disappointed because we won't have a show. And, you know, Moira says, David, you and Patrick have years to celebrate, but this day is turning into a unanimous disaster. And Alexis storms off. She's annoyed. Moira starts like whimpering and David is just shaking his head like
he looks at his engagement rings as if they're cursed. And he says,
they are.
What the fuck?
Like, how is this happening?
Favorite thing. As if these rings did something.
They're cursed. The rings are cursed.
Hilarious. I love it.
So it is a hot mess, but the show must go on, right? Because next we're at the theater. We do see this is like a legit theater. Remember, we kind of speculated at the beginning of this production, like
where
it was going to be a town hall. This is at a nice theater. It's called the Capitol Theater.
Yes, Stephanie, and I will never forget that because that on that digital online YouTube trivia game that I did a couple years ago, the name of the theater was one of two questions I got wrong on that one.
Oh.
And I had no idea it was the Capitol Theater. But now I know. Now I know.
You know, everybody. You'll never forget.
I'll never forget.
And it's Moira Rose Presents Cabaret. Yep. Is what the
of course she does.
Says. Of course.
I'm surprised it doesn't say Television's Moira Rose Presents.
Maybe they didn't have enough letters. But we're backstage, and this is like classic local theater backstage room.
It's setup. So cute and
it's
stereotypical.
So cute, perfectly staged. I love it. Everyone's getting ready. We see Bob. Remember, Bob's in the show. Twyla's there. Alexis, some other Kit Kat girls. Patrick, it is adorable. MC outfit. I'm so in love with Patrick's look in this episode. His little suspenders and his face paint. He looks like a jazzy mime. Yeah.
Yep.
David is back there though, relaying the stressful events of the day that they can't find Stevie.
I mean, someone had to tell Patrick. He's got to know anyway,
all this chaos. Yeah. Patrick though, like I love seeing him in this element. Like you can tell, like this is his space. Whether he's done a lot of theater, he takes it very seriously. We know Noah has done a lot of theater, but Patrick, you just wonder. Like we knew he did some open mic nights, and he's a musical guy. But did he ever have opportunities to like really express himself in the theater? We don't know, but he seems like completely comfortable here. So, David is frustrated about the engagement leaking, says people are coming up to him who he hasn't even spoken to, who know about it. It's just spreading like wildfire. And then just then Jocelyn, in the most preschooler teacher blouse that I've ever seen, comes up to congratulate them. Misters. Okay, Jocelyn. Patrick is like, thanks, but you know, we're just kind of concerned about the show at the moment. And Moira has told Jocelyn she has a plan. So in the last few hours, she's had to turn to plan B, which we find out as Moira comes in is for her to step in as understudy.
Patrick's shaky voice. Mrs. Rhodes, are you performing?
He's gonna have to lift his future mother-in-law.
Tell me the general spiel of Cabaret. Are they romantically involved?
No, they are not. But they do a lot of musical numbers.
They're
together.
Not. Okay. Because at first, not knowing that, I did not know. I thought.
No, Patrick is the
MC.
He's
going to kiss his mother-in-law. So he doesn't. He doesn't have like a character. He just tells
the
story.
No, but there are some like, at least in the film, there's some like dance
racy
scenes where
things.
They get a little racy. Yeah, but it's all like on stage for the cabaret audience.
Okay. So it wouldn't have been. I mean, it still would have been awkward. But yeah. Because I didn't know what the general story was there. At least it's not romantic, but still, yes, awkward for Patrick
awkward.
If Moira is stepping in.
But she's got her full Sally Bowles look. She's got the bob wig, the bowler hat, the black vest with some chains and sparkles. Mm. Patrick is like, are you performing now? And she says she has no choice, which I wonder how long she had to think about whether or not she was going to do this, or she just jumped into action. They kind of make it seem like she jumped into action.
Yeah.
Because she even says, like, I'm just going to
have an understudy. So what else?
Shimmy off the rust and hope there's still dazzle within.
Mm-hmm.
But no sooner than she says that does Stevie come in out of breath. Oof. And she's like half dressed in costume under her classic plaid flannel shirt. And David kind of stands there realizing this could be possibly very awkward. Moira is shocked that she's there, relieved, but wants to know what happened. Where were you? Jocelyn is just glad she's here so they can get started with vocal warm-ups. And Stevie apologizes and says, sorry, I had to run an errand. There was traffic and I left my phone. She didn't even bring it with her because Moira told her to like tune people out today. And
close everyone out
on
today.
The show, which was not a good idea in hindsight. And as she's saying this, she kind of looks at Moira and realizes, oh, Mrs. Rose, were you going to take my role? And it is kind of awkward. And David just kind of stands back to see how this all unfolds. Moira quickly backs up, though, and lets Stevie step into her role. Says, no, I was just dressing on theme to support. But then Moira does kind of awkwardly excuse herself to go look for like a humidifier or something stupid. So I kind of see a little bit of deflation in Moira, like she had
a little bit of disappointment.
She had to psych herself up to do this, and then just as quickly as it came, it left. You know, like the opportunity.
Bring her back down. Bring herself
back down. So yeah, Stevie is here. She's going to be able to go on. The show will go on. hopefully all of the cursed business is out of the way.
Yeah.
And then we have a nice little scene. Stevie and David are left behind, and David apologizes if him telling her his big news in any way stressed her out. But she just smiles at him and hands him a bag that she was holding behind her back. And inside of it is a engagement gift that she had ordered weeks ago when Patrick, this is so sweet. I love this. Patrick asked Stevie for her blessing to propose, which just like, again, that's where I think
solidifies the friendship status. Solidifies the friendship, right?
But it also shows Patrick's consciousness of Stevie's feelings, you know?
Yeah.
And knowing that she's an important person to David and that they do have a complicated history, maybe, but at the end of the day, they're very good friends. And he wanted to let her know.
Her to be the first to know.
And she was happy to know that this was coming. She just didn't know it was going to be so soon because she didn't have time to pick up the surprise. So that's where she was. She was driving out to Elmdale to pick up some beautiful monogrammed towels.
David will never have to ask her for towels again.
I know. That was a really sweet touch. Yeah, they don't say doctor. They say David Rose or DR. But doctor. Yeah, it was a really sweet moment where, like, a very thoughtful gift, and David appreciates it very much. And he also likes her burlesque costume. And there's like a cute little moment where she's like, watch it now, you're an almost married man. And then Jocelyn has to cut the moment short because she's like, we really need to get started with these warm-ups. And so they pull
Steve. I'd love to ask you if you could delay us any longer, but I hate rhetorical questions. Jocelyn's just had enough. She's stressed out and ready to just get this cast warmed up.
So cut to the theater, and this in particular, this is the part of the show that I'm the most attached to, is the actual cabaret show. And I know for some people it might take you out of the element of Schitt's Creek, but I think this whole scene and sequence is so well done. And there's quite a few pages in the Best Wishes book talking about just what an endeavor it was to make this happen. Yeah. And it had to be believable as a local theater production. They didn't want to make a mockery of it, but it couldn't be too good either. But right. I think
that's what I had said before about these professional actors trying to play amateur actors at this point. You got to make it. Like, you know, they're not.
You got to find that
really actor. Like, Patrick is not a real actor in the show, you know.
But Noah is. So, yeah, it's like actors playing actors. So we're in this theater. The stage is set up. They have a nice Kit Kat Club marquee. There's a band in costume off to the side. And it's a pretty full house.
I love the little clamshell floodlights at the bottom of the stage. Those are
very
my
classic Broadway. Yes. Like, it's a small like intimate theater, but I'm like really impressed after we saw the rehearsal a couple weeks ago with the dance routine, and we were like, okay, this might not be terrible. When I saw this, I was like, oh, okay, this is like
they
probably going to be good. They did it.
Yeah.
And so then David comes in, he's sitting next to Ted and Johnny and Roland. And Johnny still doesn't know about the engagement, but that's short-lived because Ted, of course, has to congratulate him right away. And Johnny is confused. What are you talking about? And Roland has to chime in. He got engaged. And
if you're talking about the wedding, we're not sure if it's going to be a black tie affair or something. What did he say? We're
something
not sure if it's
like
going to be something, but we're pretty sure it's going
to
be a black
best
tie
man,
affair.
But we're, we're pretty sure it's going to be black tie. And in that moment, Johnny has like no time to process.
Johnny just finds out.
He's so thrilled. Oh, son, that's so exciting. And he's trying to like reach over Ted to like give his son a like little hug or something.
And then poor Ted. Oh, does your dad not know?
God.
Oh.
They can't have a moment now, though, because the show is about to start.
We have no idea where Johnny has been this whole day. I can only presume he's been helping backstage and moving furniture and doing all
the
things.
Maybe he was
right?
still folding all those programs that he didn't get to last week.
He's being like stage dad or stage husband.
When
he
had a fart attack, have you ever heard that saying?
Wah, wah.
Yeah, really bad guess. It's not a heart attack. It's a fart attack.
Ba-dum-bumps. Deaf with the hits.
So the music starts, the lights dim down, and it is showtime, Katie. Patrick comes out singing the opening number as the MC with his fleet of Kit Kat girls. And this is just so, this whole sequence is magical to me. I could just watch this part over and over, honestly.
It's so cute. It really is cute.
Patrick is so in his element. Noah as Patrick, I should say, is so in his element.
Yeah, he takes over.
And I think a lot about what this probably meant for Patrick's character, you know, with him coming out of the closet, finding himself. And I think a lot about, you know, I was someone in the theater community, and I think about what a haven that was for so many young people, especially in the LGBTQ community. And I'm so happy that Patrick gets to be like a part of that, found his place in so many ways. And now he's really like literally center stage in his element in a show that historically is also very important to the LGBTQ community. Cabaret was produced not long after the Stonewall riots. So the film, which came out in the late 60s, early 70s, was just a few years after the Stonewall riots, which is the basically what kickstarted U.S. Pride parades mm-hmm. and pride festivals. It was an underground gay club that was like subjected to a police riot, basically. And okay. they fought back. And as a response, we now have annual pride parades. We have the whole month of June. We're currently in Pride Month.
Yep.
And so when this film and when the production itself came out, like that was all very fresh, current events happening. And in the play and in the film too, there's a lot of sexuality, and there's a character who is bisexual, and there's like polyamorous groupings happening, and it's all about this sort of underground community that is free of judgment and free of any bias. And the movie itself gets a lot darker because there's a lot of, all of this is happening sort of as fascism and Nazism is on the rise.
Of World War II, right?
Yes. And so you see that happening as we're looking at this community that's very self-aware and unapologetic in their self-expression. And we can kind of piece together that what's happening historically is going to like severely impact in a very tragic way these groups that were, mm-hmm. you know, learning to appreciate. Sorry. So yeah, I could go on about Cabaret, and I still encourage everybody to, if you haven't seen the movie, if you have the opportunity to see the show, the musical, I think it's definitely worth seeing and learning about mm-hmm. and reading about more. But I think just the choice that Dan and the writers made, I know David West Reed, such a hard name to say, was kind of instrumental in helping them build the script for this episode, because he is a playwright and that's his world a little bit, and they needed this to seem legit. But I think, you know, they could have chosen any play and it would have been fine.
Well,
but
this,
I think,
was obviously a conscious choice.
This was a conscious choice. Now that I know that background. I think it's a love letter to the gay community and to the fans of this show in many ways, but it also works so appropriately with some of the themes that we've seen with our characters. Like there's a love triangle in Cabaret, and we're kind of, you know, resolving possibly what Stevie looking, and yeah. David's could have been romance has sort of, that has ended, and now they are in full friendship mode, and she's right. happy for him, basically. So yeah, it's great. The opening number is great. You've all seen it. I don't need to go over it. I just want to give a quick shout out to Alexis's high kick that she's so proud of.
Yeah.
As she gets towards, like, her face is like, did you see me
Twyla,
do that?
Yeah, we see Twyla now too. Twyla's we knew dancing. She was in it, but we never saw her rehearse
she's a
or
Kit
any
Kat
part
girl
of her character.
As well. Jocelyn and Moira are in the wings, so proud. And Moira's even kind of like,
I love when she sends them out onto the stage. She said, "You've been gestating under my wings for long enough. Now it's time to fly."
Yeah. And her and Jocelyn are genuinely like happy.
They're like
this
excited.
Is what they wanted it to be. Yes. And it's living up to, and we realize exceeding even Moira's expectations. Mm-hmm. And Dan says in the book, like, they wanted to show that Moira is legit. She knows her stuff.
She knows what she's doing, no doubt.
So many references to her career, and sometimes it's made
she's never gotten the chance to prove
silly.
It.
We've never really gotten her to see her fully, you know, flex her muscles. And as a director, first time director, she's meant to seem kind of vulnerable. But at the end of the day, she put together an amazing show. But she's also able to step back and appreciate the talent of these actors that she's pulled together. So yeah, her cheering them on in the wings just makes me so happy. David is so proud of everyone in the audience. You can tell he's proud even of Moira.
You can see all four of those guys in the crowd. They're all everyone's just proud. Very amazed.
But just David, he's got his little head tilt. He's not embarrassed at all. And we know he can be so critical.
Yep.
He's so proud of everyone.
He's impressed.
Stevie, Patrick, probably a little bit of Alexis too. He's Moira. Proud of. Oh, totally proud of Moira.
Yep.
And then we see backstage between some scenes, and you can hear in the background, there's a number going on that actually like chronologically makes sense with the show. So I feel like they did a good job, even with like
of where this would actually be.
Because Moira comes in to give Steve a little pep talk, refresh her makeup, says she's wearing Magdalena very well, which is one of her favorite wigs, which is a big deal. Katie.
Another named wig.
Another big deal.
She doesn't lease those out to anybody.
Only one other time David got to borrow a wig when he was desperate to be Alanis Morissette for Halloween.
Alanis Morissette for...
Yeah. So yeah, this is a big deal. Stevie still seems a little nervous though. So she's glad to hear that Moira thinks she's pulling it off, but doesn't sound that confident herself either. And the character of Sally Bowles is kind of meant to be this like B-rate burlesque singer who wants to
be
a big star.
She's not like a superstar, right?
Like She has a tragic ending, really, in the original Cabaret film and the stage show. So she doesn't, her life doesn't play out the way that she envisions it, but she has these hopes and dreams. Her talent and her personality kind of get in her way. And I love this conversation so much between Moira and
Steve. Oh my God, me too.
You know, in spite of everything happening today, Stevie is still kind of feeling down about herself. And Moira tries to relate and says, yes, I understand. You know, before the Crows movie, I thought there was no escaping this town. And I was just as hopelessly crestfallen as you are right now. And
she says, too, well, at first, Moira thinks it's because she's a little put off by David's news.
But Stevie
has to reassure her.
Says, no,
like,
it's not that.
I'm just watching everything happen in front of my eyes and literally nothing's happening to me.
Well, exactly. She says, I just wish I wasn't watching it all happen from behind the desk. And remember when we first started this series and talked about how Stevie was kind of the narrator, kind of a passive voice. And we are seeing her step into her own.
She's totally
a lot,
not now though.
And she's not passive, but she still has that insecurity. And yeah, it's hard. I can totally relate. Like what you said, when people have like big life-changing moments and you can't
and
help but look at your
static,
own life,
you know?
And be like, should I be at that point right now? Why am I not doing these things? Like you get a little self-conscious and critical of yourself too. But Moira says, you are exactly where you need to be right now. And I want you to use the feelings you're having right now and channel them into your performance. And Steve is a little confused. She's like, do you think I need, like, are you talking to me as Stevie or me as Sally? And she said, no, you as Sally, use what you're feeling and channel it into your performance. But just know, Stevie, you are fine. Like you,
I'm not worried about you.
I am not worried about you. You are the coolest person in this town. How can you just be exactly who you are and own it? And she even says, whether you set sail or stay put, that part of you
change.
Is never going to change.
Fucking love this speech. You know, my Moira mom.
She's
heart.
Such a mom. And she even says, now go take Sally and show the people everything that Sally could be if she was just a little bit more like you. And that is just the perfect pep talk that Stevie needed. You can tell it really hits
her. She's like shocked that anyone would say anything so nice about her, especially Moira Rose.
And I think this whole conversation does clear up where Stevie stands. I don't think she had romantic jealousy of David. I think it was more just she got to, she had to sit what she feels like was in a sort of static position as David came in Hot Mess Express a couple years ago. No money, no prospects, no life, and now has built all these things. And she feels like she's not seeing that progression in her life. And that's why she's struggling. And it's not because she wants to be David's partner romantically. She's his best friend. But it's more just, well,
this isn't the,
what's happening,
I mean,
in my life.
We've talked about the Roses becoming more of a parental figure to Stevie over this last season and a half, but this is definitely not the first remember when her Aunt Maureen died, Moira even gave her a pep talk way back then before she was kind of in the family.
Like that she would go to her funeral.
Yeah, like, I know I'll be there and I'll have nice things to say. So she's got kind of a soft spot for Stevie in her heart. She always has.
Without the like mother-daughter trauma that she and Alexis had. Like, clean slate there.
She could clean slate there. Didn't have to send her to therapy for anything. Yeah. Just off the hook on that, but gets to give her these little pieces. And even too, when she was saying, take 1,000 naked pictures of yourself because you're more beautiful than you think you are, you know?
Oh, just
all these little boosts for her from Moira.
But even just hearing Moira tell Stevie that she thinks she's cool, like, how many people has Moira ever said that to? You could probably count them on one finger. And it's Stevie.
None. She never thought she'd say it about anyone in
anybody,
this town.
Let alone this town. I feel like in general, she's not in one to tell people that they're cool. So that puts Stevie in the headspace she needs to be to finish the show. Cut to, this is my absolute favorite moment, is when Stevie goes out and sings Maybe This Time. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Cabaret, this is not the finale song. This is actually like middle of act one, but it's like the best song for Sally Bowles, where she's like optimistic and she
putting all of her hopes and dreams on
putting
the table,
all of her hopes and dreams in what could be. The way the actual show plays out in the end does not pan out that way. But this is like a great spot to leave Stevie, especially after the conversation she just had with Moira. So she goes out and she starts singing. You can tell she's a little nervous. There's a little bit of shakiness, and Moira's still guiding her from the wings, like, you know, project your voice.
You're doing great.
And you're doing great. And you can even see like Jocelyn and the Kit Kat girls are all watching and rooting for her. And as this whole performance builds, you can see like it just becomes Stevie living the role.
Her confidence just like
she tunes out the world and she hears the words she's singing and she feels them. And it's just like she shocks herself in the end. David is crying. Moira is like shocked. She
in
thought
tears.
She just had
everybody
to give
is, yeah.
Stevie a little pep talk to get her back on stage. She's like blown away. She didn't see this coming. I still cry. I cried all four times
so
I watched
good.
It this week. It's so good. And this is where I, again, feel like David is in love with Stevie as his best friend. And he could not be happier for her right now. And wants everyone to know it, because as soon as she
Who saw this coming?
Nobody saw it coming.
For somebody that didn't even audition for this part.
Right. Fun fact, though, Emily Hampshire has said in the book, too, and I've seen interviews where she says Sally Bowles was always her dream role. Like, she never in a million years saw herself being talented enough to, like, professionally play that role. But if, like,
this is great.
This is my pipe dream role. And she kind of mentioned it to Dan, and Dan's like, well,
Dan
we're doing
made
Cabaret.
It happen for her.
And she kind of thought, oh, like Stevie will be in the background of the Kit Kat girls. And she's like, no, you are like, this is the season of
so
Stevie.
Cool.
You're going to be Sally Bowles. And so again, so many layers that made it so special.
Good
and
for her.
As soon as she finishes the number, it's a roaring applause. David leaps to his feet and is clapping and has to tell the stranger next to him, that's
wants
my
everyone
friend.
To know.
He's so proud. Also, I forgot to shout out Ted throughout the whole show. Like everybody's
playbill up.
Everybody's great aunt just holding his playbill with his jaw sort of
with that hunting, dumb look
that
on his
dumb
face.
Look.
That dumb Ted look on his face.
Like the people who do like I'm guilty of that a time or two, but just like it's so
such
corny.
A cute little spectator.
He is. And Stevie is even surprised. Like at the end, she kind of comes back to reality a little bit because she was so in the moment and just kind of can't believe what she did. So yeah, that's Cabaret, folks. We have one last scene back at the motel. We get the cast party or a version of it. Johnny's congratulating them, you know, tells Moira, I was shocked, but he's like, or she's like, well, what do you mean?
You were dazzling. I was shocked.
amazed. I should say I was amazed. And a couple people are still in their stage makeup. Twyla and Alexis still have on their really thick.
Those weird eyebrows.
The
like
eyebrows,
pointy eyebrows
and really bright pink blush. And Ted is about to leave. And Alexis has a little moment with him. And says, you know, I'll be there, you know, sipping pina coladas with you there in no time. And he's like, well, it's not really that kind of place, but
I get not that point. Type of vacation.
And so she kind of gets everyone's attention and says, everybody, Ted has to. And she says, the pun of all puns, Galapago now. And it makes Ted just fall even more in love with her. He's just like, oh, that's the best. And
so punny.
So punny. So Ted heads out to the airport. And then at the end of the night, David still wants to get in his moment. So he's up on the chair, tries to make this speech happen that he had envisioned so perfectly, but it's been derailed over the course of the day. He starts by congratulating Cabaret, and it's like a very generic, so good. You guys were awesome.
The show was awesome. You guys did so good.
Speaking of love, it's like you weren't actually speaking of love, but okay. And then he starts to go into
somebody got engaged.
His speech. And then Jocelyn even chimes in, like,
the second moment they have ruined for David and Patrick. I mean, although,
yeah,
they just really
can't
ruin.
Catch a break.
They just really can't.
And even Jocelyn chimes in, you guys are getting married. And David has to say, Jocelyn, I'm the one on the chair. Like, give me
it
my
is
moment.
Nice that they're genuinely excited for them.
They are. Yeah, that. They just can't hold back their excitement. Yeah. So he's trying to get back on track again, talking about how he met this guy 2 years ago applying for a business permit and didn't know his life was about to change. And just as he gets to the point where he's about to say the big news, Moira's phone goes off and she has to take it in the other room. She says, David, I already know you're engaged. And she goes to take the call. Alexis is like, just spit it out already. And as he finally says, we're engaged. And Ronnie even questions a little bit. She's like, you're going to marry him.
He's marrying you.
Which I didn't know if she was saying that to Patrick or to David, because we know she hates Patrick. But
yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell based on her eyes.
Yeah, more surprised. So as soon as he says the big news, we hear a scream from the other room. So once again, the moment is spoiled because now they all rush in to find Moira just collapsed on the floor. And Johnny thinks maybe it was a bad review. He tells her not to listen to those local critics, but that's not it. Terrible news. The Crows movie, Katie, it's been shelved. It's not going to happen, and it's over.
Hollywood speak for it's not happening.
It's not happening. And
they're boxing up the film, and they're literally putting it on a shelf.
She is devastated. Forget all of the good things that just happened today. Forget Cabaret. Her life is over.
Right. Despite everything good that's been happening, that was still her way out.
That was. She crawls herself into the closet and shuts the door behind, or the accordion doors rather, behind her. And we just hear this soft whimpering from the inside. And Johnny just kind of stands there like, well, nothing to see here, folks. I guess the party is over. And David is collecting champagne glasses, but then has a quick last minute, well, unless we want to do a toast. And Patrick shakes his head. No, not the time. So the party.
Poor David didn't get his moment, but
he didn't get his moment. And party's over.
You can tell. I love how I was watching this, and like right in the foreground is Stevie, Johnny, Alexis, David, and Patrick. You know, the whole family right there. And all five of them know how serious this is. They know she's not gonna just bounce back from this. They know it's a big, big deal.
Yeah. So I love that this episode and this season really ends on a bit of a cliffhanger in a way we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And I think I know actually at this point we knew that the sixth season was going to be the final season of the series.
Yeah.
And so I like that they kind of give us a bit of a dramatic lead-in to whatever is going to come next. And so this episode has just had so many ups and downs. It made me laugh, made me cry multiple times for multiple reasons and good ways. And for that reason, as I said at the beginning, this is obviously my Simply the Best.
Obviously.
I'm also realizing I didn't break for the Elmdale Arts Council. So Elmdale Arts Council, I'm so sorry we were not able to accommodate your sponsor at this
episode was too important to take a break.
It was too important.
I thought of that just like 10 minutes ago and it was like, oh, we're too late. I'm not even going to bring it up.
No, I mean, we appreciate your support. Maybe
you're off the hook writing that sponsor ad.
We'll try to squeeze you in next season. Thank you again, Elmdale Arts Council. This was my simply the best, and I'm very happy with it. It's an important episode to me, even if it's not important to everyone else. I know why I love it.
Well, what I think I have to say, I'm a little scared now knowing the history of Cabaret and I'm a little fearful for
my if they had done The Sound of Music or The Wizard of Oz, I don't think I would love it as much as I do. Not to say those aren't great shows, but I think the like the symbolism and the layered meaning behind the show.
It's another genius writing. It's another for sure.
It just proves that this was the episode when I saw it. And I think this is one of the first ones I saw like when it came out and I wasn't binging through the series. I knew I liked the show and I like enjoyed the show a lot, but this was the episode where I was like, I'm in love with this show. Like, this episode solidified that for me.
Well, damn, that took 5 seasons.
It took 5 seasons, but like,
you had moments before that.
I had moments, but this was like, this was just like, this felt like a genius episode to me.
It really is. And just so many details that they all pay, Dan especially, but they all the writers and cast and crew pay attention to. This, I gotta say, it's gonna be a battle, I will say.
It is. But you have a really strong contender too. I mean Patrick's coming out story and
there's so many good
his parents is also I think we've chosen really
I think we've chosen the two best this season for sure. Well, good. Congrats. Congrats to you.
I've been stressing. There's more I could say and I'll save it for next week. But
I told her, guys, I got to edit this too. So let's not make it an hour and a half long or more or less.
The episode shouldn't be longer than the stage show. So we'll try to keep this a little bit shorter. The end of season 5, Katie. We have one more season left to do. But next week, we will be back, of course, for our head-to-head debate.
Head-to-head.
Give everyone a quick refresh of what your Simply the Best episode was.
So my Simply the Best was Meet the Parents. And in that episode, Patrick basically is forced to come out to his parents because they were invited to his surprise party by David. And this whole shit show of bad fortune happens because of that invite. But it all works itself out at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we've got some great heartfelt moments in both of our episodes, I think. Well, good.
I am a sucker for Moira. You know it. And I do love her speech to Stevie. 100% one of my favorite moments in the show.
Yeah. So. Should we ask some polls this week leading up to our debate episode?
Let's ask if anybody's had any good luck or break a leg luck stories, if you will. Since I didn't know that.
Are
was
you
a thing.
Superstitious or are you a little bit stitious?
Are you superstitious or a little bit stitious, Michael Scott? Superstitious. I'm writing these down.
Let's weigh in on people's opinions about Stevie's relationship with David and how that's evolved. And just open that door if people have anything they want to say about how they read into Stevie's reaction. Or, you know, where her relationship is now with David or how it's evolved.
It would be fun to, well, I guess at this point, I assume most of our listeners have already watched it. So I was going to say it would be fun to theorize what's going to happen now with Moira's career. But I think
stay tuned.
I think that most people know that are listening with us.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So I think that's good. We'll be back. I got to get ready now. I got to get ready to duke it out with my episode next week. So
and we'll be able to talk about the Tonys next week. Katie,
the outcome.
You have a fun weekend this weekend, no?
I'm going to Taylor Swift.
Swifties.
I'm so excited. I would not call myself a Swiftie. I stayed with my nieces last night and I just found out how hard I actually am not a Swiftie because she's going on Saturday. I'm going to the Friday show, both in Detroit. And she is already speculating on what secret songs we're going to get and playing all these underground ones that I've never heard of. And she's like, you're not even a real fan. I'm like, yes, I am. I know all the popular ones. It's going to be so fun. I'm really excited. Joe keeps threatening to sell our tickets because they're worth so much money. And I said, sell yours. I'll go with a complete stranger. I don't care. I want to go at this point.
Just I'm please. Set. I would like at some point a video of Joe at a Taylor Swift concert because that.
Well, did I tell you what he's wearing?
No.
So real quick, we're already long, but on his birthday, we hung out with some friends and got a little drunk and we came over and we were talking about the Taylor Swift concert. And a couple of friends were like, I can't believe you're actually going to Taylor Swift. He said, he likes any kind of music. That's yeah. just Joe. He doesn't, whatever. And my friend Christina said, well, what are you going to wear? You got to wear something bedazzled. If I bedazzle something for you, will you wear it? And in his drunken state, he said, absolutely. She bedazzled a denim vest and it is so, I'm going to send you pictures. Okay. I will let you know. It is so decked out, but on the front breast area, it says hi in jewels and it's got all these jewels down the front. And in the back, it says, it's me with a whole row of fringe and diamonds. And he has to wear this now because she's putting the time and money.
Yeah.
And her husband is actually going, she's not a Swiftie at all, but her husband is going the night before. So now we have to also meet and do the swap out so he can wear it as well.
So they're both wearing the vest.
So both of them are wearing the bedazzled
vest. All need to see pictures at this point.
I think I'm the only one in the world that doesn't have my outfit planned out for Taylor Swift. I have no idea. But he is, in an effort to secure his manhood, wearing that over top of his Metallica t-shirt.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah.
It might be too warm for that.
He's not really.
He's not pulling a Patrick.
He's not worried about his manhood. Should I wear my fringe vest or should I wear anything under it?
Yeah.
He's wearing the Metallica t-shirt just because he thinks it would be funny that Metallica and T-Swift don't really go together. So
there you go.
So yeah, I'm really excited. We're leaving tomorrow night. I'm going to be editing this in the car. I should be right on time this week, guys. No late release for me.
Well, thank you, everyone. I know this is a long episode. I hope you enjoy Cabaret as much as I do. Enjoy the Tonys if you watch this week. Participate in our polls. We'll see you back next week for our season 5 head-to-head debate. And until then, Katie, best wishes.
And warmest regards.
Fat Spatula.